You call that radio?
If you call that radio, audio podcast, season 4, episode 21, and I had a few ideas for today's show, but I am recovering from some minor surgery, and I promised to rest, recover, and keep my podcast introductions to under 60 seconds. So that's what I'm going to do. We're just going to do, this is the news roundup for October. So that includes Helen Mirren, Kurt Cobain, and the GPS mystery. We'll be talking about that. We will be looking at stand-up comedians' attempt to sway the presidential election and why that may have backfired. But the election's in a couple of days, so that may not age well. We're also going to ask, has the weather turned woke? And why do people keep saying that the weather's turned woke? Also share some memories of the ABC, the famous Glasgow venue, as the bulldozers arrive on Sucky Hall Street. And also did a review of the Dandy Warhols gig at the Academy when I'm actually in a wee bit of pain and I'm on some painkillers, so I'm not going to talk anymore. I just want to thank the patrons at patreon.com/ you call that radio for supporting this show. And if you don't really like the news, then there's episodes and upon episodes of interviews, the normal format, by looking back at previous shows. We'll be back next week with an interview again, but this is the new thing, isn't it? At the end of the month, we just look back at what's happened the previous month. So I hope you enjoy it, and let's start with the biggest story of the month, which is of course Helen Mirren saying something about Kurt Cobain that I just can't stop thinking about.
I got you. 1-2. 1-2, 1-2. Yo, this is Charlie Tuna from Jurassic 5 Live and direct here in Glasgow, Scotland, and you call that radio?
It's a big news week, isn't it? You've got the election happening, you've got the budget happening, there's lots of stuff happening in the news. But the big story for me, the one I can't get out of my head, is Helen Mirren talking about Kurt Cobain. I can't get it out of my head, so I'm going to quote it correctly. I'm not dissing Helen Mirren, I just can't get it out of my head. But Helen Mirren said in an interview, "I always say it's so sad that Kurt Cobain died when he did, because he never got to see GPS. It's the most wonderful thing, my little blue spot walking down the street. I just find it completely magical and unbelievable." So this is what people are saying on Twitter about it, then I'm going to give my own theory on it all. "Every day I think about how much Tupac would have enjoyed the little miracle of Duolingo, just a little owl teaching you words every day." Edward Jenkins says, "Such a tragedy that Notorious B.I.G. never got to enjoy the benefits of contactless payment." Christina says, "I always say it's so sad that Jimi Hendrix died when he did, because he never saw next day Amazon Prime shipping." I read it, I shared it, I tried to move on with my life, but I don't think I can. I can't stop thinking about it. You know, she's actually talking about the Kurt Cobain, Nirvana legend who made some of the greatest records in the history of rock and roll and inspired a global movement. The man who sadly died due to a gunshot wound, the autopsy says was self-inflicted, but rumours persist to this day that there was foul play. When I think of Kurt, I think of stuff like that. I don't think of the blue dot of GPS. I mean, what is actually going on here? I hope Helen is okay. Of all the things that Kurt Cobain has missed out on in the last 30 years, he's a grandfather now. His daughter married Tony Hawk's son. He'd probably be interested in what happened to Dave Grohl and the Foo Fighters. I think there's just other things that he'd be more interested in, of all the things. It's like saying if Elvis Presley was to come back from the dead, I'd order him an Uber. He'd like that. I'd show him how the Uber Eats app works, and then I'd order him a pizza from Domino's. I mean, to be honest, Elvis probably would love that. So that's maybe a bad example because he'd probably love that. But what evidence do we have to support that Kurt would even entertain GPS? Did she meet him at a 24-hour garage in the 90s one night and he was just rustling a map next to the pot noodles, looking flustered, just belted out? There must be an easier way to tour without having to rely on maps. But there doesn't seem to be any evidence that Helen Mirren met Kurt Cobain at a 24-hour garage. There seems to be no context to this at all. I mean, just think of all the things that's happened in the last 30 years. What about lockdowns? Was Helen Mirren walking about Tesco with a mask on thinking, I wonder what Michael Jackson would make of all of this? I mean, that's another bad example, because we all know that Jackson loved a mask. He'd have been into all of that. So what is the context for the thought? What is the missing link between Kurt Cobain, Helen Mirren, and GPS technology? I'm asking you to get in touch with me if you've got a theory, because I've investigated this as much as I can. I've looked for the actual interview. I can't find the actual interview. I just want to get the bottom of it just so I can get on with my life, man. I can't stop thinking about it. Radio. You call that radio? What's it for? Have podcasters and comedians ruined the presidential election of 2024? Let's find out. With less than a week to go, Trump and Harris are level on the polls, depending on who you ask, obviously. I think the Twitter poll of Elon Musk says that Donald Trump's about 80%. But in general, Harris is winning some, Trump's winning others. It looks very level pegging. Did the Joe Rogan interview give Trump a meaningful boost? Or did his pal Tony Hinchcliffe just reverse the Rogan effect by making a joke about Puerto Rico at a rally? But let's listen to the joke first before we jump to any conclusions.
I don't know if you guys know this, but there's literally a floating island of garbage in the middle of the ocean right now. Yeah. I think it's called Puerto Rico. Okay. All right. Okay.
First of all, it's a shit joke. But comedy is in the eye of the beholder. And at a comedy club, that wouldn't be that risky. I've heard a lot worse. I'm not offended, but I am not from Puerto Rico. Many people enjoy the work of Tony Hinchcliffe. Even myself, I used to enjoy Kill Tony briefly for a wee while. I used to see random clips that featured some comedians that I do like, and it seemed decent. Kind of like X Factor for open mic comics. Scripted, cruel, and in front of a live studio audience. But the more I watched it, the less I could enjoy it, as the format quickly repeated itself over and over again, and the sheer smugness of host Tony Hinchcliffe very quickly started to grate on me personally. especially as the success went to his head and the Netflix money entered his bank account. When the opposing side is accusing you of being Nazis, then it might not be the best time to try out edgy jokes that make you look a little bit like a Nazi. His whole career was built upon sticking the boot into people who make jokes that are not well received. And I do not believe that this joke has been well received. I also don't believe in the censorship of comedy, but very aware that this was a stupid thing to do a week before the election, especially when there's 500,000 voters of Puerto Rican descent in a swing state of Pennsylvania. But Tony isn't the only comedy podcaster in amongst it. Joe Rogan gave Trump about 3 hours on the biggest platform in the world. And that went well for the former president, who's seeking to become president again so he can change the laws so he doesn't go to jail. So what did Donald Trump actually do last time? What did he do? But also, what has the current vice president done in the last 4 years that was of any note? They both seem like horrific options. So that's why anything can happen at this stage. Trump hiring the likes of that muppet Elon Musk, who wants to take charge of the economy. And then you've got Robert Kennedy Jr. wanting to take charge of health. What's next? Is he going to hire Andrew Schultz to be in charge of the biggest military industrial complex on the planet? He just doesn't make very good decisions, man. And I'm in Scotland, but his decisions are so bad that they will affect me somehow. Eventually, it'll trickle down and Scotland's affected. So that's why you've got to pay attention, because we kind of just follow whatever America does, for the most part. And then there's also comedians that I like. People like Theo Vaughan and Tim Dillon have been interviewing Trump's number two, J.D. Vance, over the last week. And to me, it's just so surreal seeing how these sort of Rogan sphere podcast world is now slap bang in the middle of deciding something so big. And why is this happening? A couple of reasons. One, it's taken over from mainstream media. Joe Rogan always talks about mainstream media, unaware that he is now the mainstream media. His show is bigger than anyone else's shows, probably all the shows put together. But the other thing is that you've got Dana White, the UFC owner, is friends with Trump and he's friends with all these comedians. And also, who wouldn't want to interview Donald Trump? I'd do it. If he wants to try and convince 4,000 voters in the swing state of Denniston, then he can come on this show. The problem I have is not the fact that they gave him a platform. It's just the fact, I don't want to use the word glazing, because that just seems to be a word that Americans use and it's coming over here. There's an example of American culture infecting Scotland. Glazing. It's just the fact that there is no pushback on anything when there is so much at stake. This isn't just the middle of a random week. This is the week before election and Donald Trump's on there just repeating the same talking points over and over again. And occasionally they ask him about sports or something. There's been zero chat about the insurrection or any discussions about the various crimes the guy has been found guilty of or is soon to be found guilty of. Obviously, if he becomes president, it will make it so he can't be found guilty of anything. I mean, this is why he's running. He's running this time to keep himself out of the jail. You don't actually think he's doing it to make the country better. You surely don't believe that. I mean, I get that you don't like Harris. You know, she looks steaming half the time.
Never let anyone take your joy from you. You do what you gotta do.
The comedy circuit, the podcast circuit, they like Trump. He's 1,000% more entertaining than Harris is. But I also think that they've been seduced by power, confused by money, and have quiet ambitions to turn the White House into a hangout for all their comedian friends, like the good old days of the Comedy Store. They want Trump to win so that they can be even closer to the top of the food chain, because they kind of helped him win if he does win. And I think that's what stops them from thinking too much about the consequences of their actions. They know that the guy's a liar. They know he's a liar. They know he's not to be trusted. But they quite like the idea of him winning so they can say, well, you know, I helped you, you can help me. And maybe we can just hang about the White House whenever we want. So some people are helping Trump for nefarious reasons, and others are just doing it because they wanted to interview Trump, and others are just not really thinking about it because they quite like the idea of being in the White House in some level. It's a story. It's a story to tell folk, innit? Backstage at the Comedy Mothership. Remember that time we got the president elected? And then he did some mad stuff. And that's if he doesn't do any mad stuff. I mean, on the plus side, he might not actually do that much mad stuff. He seems quite tired. He might just change the laws so he doesn't go to jail and just no do anything. But it's not about Trump, it's about who is funding Trump, who is behind him. What is J.D. Vance's ambitions like? What is Elon Musk going to do with all that power? That's much more terrifying than what Trump's going to do. So in closing, I just think that some of these podcast interviews could age like milk if it all kicks off. But a week's a long time in politics, so I'm sure there's a good chance that my thoughts will age badly as well. But I only have about 4,000 subscribers on YouTube, 6,000 on Facebook, and about the same again on Apple and Spotify. So there's a lot less pressure on me to be right about anything. So I think Trump doing Rogan really helped him. Getting Vance and other podcasts helped him. Getting Tony on to do racist jokes might have undid all the good work. So when Trump says they stole the election from him, please remind Donald Trump, the guy who stole the election was Tony Hinchcliffe. Now this is the bit where most people would say, like, subscribe, and join my Patreon at patreon.com/ you call that radio. But that's something that I would never, ever, ever do.
We applaud you. We are here to tell the people that we hear you.
Good evening. Today we are asking, is the weather woke? Okay, so I think we're going to do this in two parts. In the USA, people think that Hurricane Milton is a social justice warrior, cancelling everybody who says anything slightly offensive in the Florida area. Meanwhile, in the UK, people are suggesting that the colourful rays of light in the skyline that is the Aurora Borealis is potentially an LGBT chemtrail sent from Brussels to derail Brexit and turn the freaking frogs gay. So let's start with the hurricanes. A Republican politician, Marjorie Taylor Greene, an elected politician, says they control the weather. Now, first of all, let's get something straight. Cloud seeding is indeed a real thing. And before you want to make me out to be some kind of Normie Normington who can't wake up to the Matrix. I've never seen the Matrix, but I know that's the kind of thing that you say. Can I just clarify, A, I don't trust the government, whether it's Republican, Democrat, Labour, or Tory, or SNP. B, I think they should ban political parties altogether because it's just a hotbed of hypocrisy and corruption. I'll go into that in more detail another time. C, I do not trust the mainstream media because they're funded by the same people who fund the political parties. And D, I also don't trust most alternative media because they're also funded by the same people who fund the mainstream media and the political parties. And finally, E. I was so open-minded and awake to the Matrix, however you want to call it. For many years, I thought USA was a fake country. I actually thought every country was fake until I started visiting the fake countries and realised that it might be quite a lot of work and a lot of hassle to fake a country, especially since you can, you know, just go there and see for yourself if it's real or no. So what I'm trying to say is, I am very sceptical of all information. And yes, that includes a random guy on Twitter or Donald Trump saying that they gave all the disaster fund money to illegal immigrants. And they said, why would they do that? Because they want to boost the Democrats' vote. So they're bribing the illegal immigrants with money. Disaster fund money. Despite the fact that illegal immigrants can't vote, they're not allowed to vote. What I think I'm trying to get is, I hate the whole question everything mentality. Apart from people that you agree with. So it's like, question everything apart from a random guy on YouTube called Patriot Eagle 51. Or, by the way, I don't know if that's a real guy, I just made that up. But you know, those kind of handles. Or it's, question everything apart from a rich billionaire, former president. A former president who claims to be anti-establishment. And not only is a former president, but there's a good chance he could be president again by next month. Now, being the president of the United States of America is pretty fucking establishment. It's pretty establishment. It's about as establishment as it gets. So without getting into all the theories, I don't believe that cooking up a hurricane and firing it at Florida is scientifically possible at this time. But why would they tell me? They wouldn't tell me if they could do that. So maybe it's possible. But if it was possible, would they do it to their own people? Absolutely. Probably. I don't see why they wouldn't fire a hurricane at Florida. Apart from the fact that I don't see how this helps the Democrats get votes at all. I mean, I think the angle is that you kill lots of Florida voters and as a result, the Democrats win the election. But all that's really happened is you've disrupted a major part of Trump land. You've pissed them off by making them leave their big hussies for a few days. And you've just given Donald Trump, you've set him up nicely to blame the state for not doing enough. And then you're giving people like Russell Brand a chance to pray for a Republican vote in the rain. But on both sides, I hate that weather is now political. Whether that's people jumping online to say it's definitely climate change. Now, I'll admit I don't know enough about weather to decipher whether this hurricane would have happened if we weren't consistently poisoning the earth. I'm sure hurricanes happened before the Industrial Revolution. I don't know. I would go as far to say as maybe the hurricane would have been a lot worse were it not for McDonald's ditching plastic straws. I don't know about this stuff, right, man? From what I've gathered, man-made climate change is real, according to about 99% of the scientists. And I think we need to sort out the 5% of the corporations that are doing 90% of the damage to our planet and stop picking on poor people who are just trying to drive to work. That would be my idea. And it blows my mind that you don't believe in man-made climate change, but you think Kamala Harris can fart out 12 tornadoes whenever she fancies it. B, Be consistent with this stuff. But let me know what you think. Leave a comment whether you agree with me or disagree with me, because you probably know the same amount as me about this stuff, which is very little. But also let me know if you'd like me to do a part two about the rise of Aurora Borealis taking over the UK by storm. Let me know if you want me to do a part two about why my entire Facebook feed is filled with people taking pictures of pretty skies. And what's supposed to be a rare occurrence, but it seems to be happening every other week. And last night was the first time I went out into the city to see if I could see it with my own eyes. And it's a scam. It works if you take a picture with your phone. But it's a wholesome scam. Everybody's in the park. Everybody's taking pictures to upload to Facebook and Twitter and stuff like that. So as far as scams go, it's pretty wholesome. There's worse things happening in the world. But I don't think it's man-made. I don't think it's anything to do with the EU. I don't think it's anything to do with the LGBT community. And I don't think it's climate change either. I don't think it's anything to do with climate change. I don't think we should be worried about pretty patterns in the sky. If you notice, what's really happening is it's just people are getting better cameras. So, like, in the city, because of the light pollution, you would never, ever see it. And last night, I didn't see it with my own eyes. I couldn't see it with the naked eye, but when I pointed my camera at it, as if by magic, it was there. So you've got all the people in the city who are... which accounts for most of the people on social media, are now taking photos all the time. And it spreads like wildfire. As soon as someone posts a pretty picture, everyone's out there with their phones. So we're taking pictures of things that never existed before. I don't think it's anything to worry about, but maybe I'll delve in a bit deeper in part two. If you want to see that, let us know in the comments.
We are here to tell people that we hear you.
Just been looking at the crazy drone picture from Pics by Pedro, and also the Abandoned Scotland pics from Mitch Brooklyn. And it's just heartbreaking to see what the ABC has become and what it's going to become. So I just thought I would share some memories of the venue, and the demolition begins this week. It's begun. One of Scotland's most iconic venues. And yeah, let's just talk about some thoughts about the place, what I remember about the place, from the ABC, which is the big room, and the smaller room, which is the ABC 2, which for many years was a linchpin in Glasgow's music scene. For many, many years, and before that, I think it was many things. I think it was a cinema, but all a bit before my time. I only remember it as being a music venue. I can't remember the first time I was there, but I enjoyed countless gigs, club nights as a punter, and a few as a performer and a promoter as well. I never played the big stage, but we played the ABC 2 a few times. Actually, that's not technically true. I played the big stage. I did play the big stage, technically. I was Loki's generic hype man during his Scottish Album of the Year performance when he had a full band with him. I think it was Loki and the Cartel, or the Cartoon Cartel. I think by the time we went on stage, it was Loki and the Cartel, and Becky Wallace was bitching the hook, and I was generic hype man, where I managed to get Prosecco networking trending. I just came straight from Knockingorick Festival, and it was at the time, if anyone remembers, I had a vocal polyp, so my voice was very deep, and then when you added a festival of drinking and smoking and performing, then I basically had no voice at all. But for what I lacked in vocal cords, I made up in a sort of misplaced confidence, because just before the band came on stage, I went in to do the introduction, and this is the Scottish the Album of the Year thing, and I announced my band as the winner. I think I said that I'm from the future.
The winner of the 2016 Album of the Year Award, Scottish Album of the Year Award, is Who Took Utopia by the Gyro Babies.
Had a confused response, maybe a couple of people cheered, most people didn't know who the fuck I was. And I do wonder if that maybe did affect us getting longlisted the following year. I don't know. But I really played it a second time with Colonel Mustard in the Dijon 5 and Bomb Scare were both playing. I was definitely supposed to come in with Colonel Mustard, maybe Bomb Scare as well, because I did used to join Bomb Scare for a couple of tunes way back in the day. But I was running the after party at the art school a few yards away. Well, on Google Maps, a few yards away, but it's a very steep hill. Anyone who's done that before will know. But it's very close. In fact, the fire that destroyed ABC started at the art school. So that's how close the art school is to the ABC. So I've been setting things up for the after party, and I've dived down to jump on stage, and security wouldn't let me. Because while I was setting up the after party, I'd missed a bit where didn't get the memo that we needed a security pass, and I didn't have one. And the bouncer refused to let me get anywhere near the stage. So as my song's playing out, I'm like, come on, come on. I realised that I'd missed my chance because the song was playing and the guy wasn't for changing his mind. And then I think I said something like, is it more than your job's worth? And at that point, I was ejected from the ABC. So I didn't get to play that night. But it didn't spoil the night. We had a great night at the Late Night Sketchy Christmas special. One of my other favourite moments was I got to open up for and support for Action Bronson, who's actually very famous now. He's a famous MC, but he did a Damn That Tastes Good, what's it called? Shit That Tastes Delicious or something like that, which is a Vice show that went viral online. So he's kind of like a food critic now. There's many things that he does. But Action Bronson was hilarious that night. He was walking around with a wireless microphone because he doesn't like stage. In his words, I can't do his accents. But Action Bronson doesn't like stage. So he's just wandering around with a wireless mic, rapping his ass off. And he actually went into the toilet at one point, had a pish, and you could hear him pishing through the big PA. And that was a great night, and it was great to be on stage. We were, I was just part of like a kind of cypher. I don't think it was planned or anything like that, but you had Louis, Tongue Acrobats, and Dunhamer, I think, were on that night as well. And that was very, very, very early on in Jackal Trades. That was me trying to do sort of more hip-hop music. So it was a great experience to do that, although I wouldn't have been very good. I'm pretty sure I wasn't very good. But I want to give a shout out to Bunty, because when I think of the ABC, I do think of Bunty, because he brought so many big hitters from the USA, so many big names from England, and he gave a spotlight on a lot of local talent to support these big names that came to Glasgow. And especially the Badmouth Battles nights, which were crazy. The big one that sticks out is the Jinx versus Loki rematch, which is a hardcore grudge match battle rap, and the atmosphere was absolutely electric, man. The Badmouth nights were always great. They initially I was the original booker for Pivo Pivo when they started there, and the first two were so successful, with queues around the block, people couldn't get in, that I had to move to a bigger venue. And then Bunty took it to the next level in that bigger venue. When the Badmouth Battles finished, there was always an amazing hip-hop night after it. So it was really good times, and I don't think that the hip-hop scene in Scotland's really recovered from the ABC not being there. Because, you know, you don't really hear of local talent supporting the big names when they come over anymore. So I think it's not, you don't realise what you've got till it's gone, but I think we've got to show our appreciation for Bunty, who's a phenomenal DJ, producer, for him making those connections and giving so many artists a platform on that stage. But yeah, I did also play the ABC 2 with the Gyro Babies. It was a charity night, The Ball from the Paul. I did that. I think John McKinley, filmed it all, the full set. So I think you can find that on YouTube if you give a shit. And also played a full Jack of Trades set after I'd released an album. I think that was an Ox Jam night. That was Lindsay McGee who booked me for that one. Shouts to her, that was a great night too. And there was a few gigs I did as a promoter. I remember Slamboree played the ABC. We were doing the after party with Slamboree Sound System. It broadcast across the road. That I remember that being a good one as well. And as a punter, just as somebody that liked going to gigs, ABC was just the perfect size to get your up-and-coming touring acts in the ABC too, and then your bigger, more mainstream acts in the main room. And the one that stands out was Alabama 3. I was there with Gordy Duncan. It was Gordy's dad's favourite band. And we were watching that in awe. R.I.P. Jake. Jake was still around. And my Gyro Babies were playing the after party as well. I think it was at River that night, if I remember rightly. But it was just it was an amazing night just to see Alabama 3 playing a sold-out ABC, knowing that we were doing the after party. And then you know, meeting all the band after as well. And I think we even got a jam with Larry Love that night. And that was a magical moment. And when Alabama 3 are on form, I don't think there's many better bands on the planet. So that stands out. Brian Jonestown Massacre, another one that comes to mind. I'm a huge fan of them. And actually ended up backstage briefly. But I'll maybe keep that one for the autobiography. But that was the first time I've ever seen them live after being a fan for decades, probably. And that was amazing. And weirdly, Wolfpack as well. That sticks in my mind. That was a crazy night because that kind of... It was like a Nathan Barley hipster convention. Everyone had twirly moustaches. They kind of played jazz funk music, so the hipsters were attracted to it. And it was sold out because they just went viral for releasing Sleepify, which was a 10-track silent album on Spotify, in order to raise funds for a free tour. The album generated £20,000 in royalties over a 2-month period. Subsequently, Spotify removed the album, stating that it violated their terms of content. Shoutouts to Wolfpack for finding a Spotify loophole, and then giving it back to the fans. That was actually sold out that night. I think, if I remember rightly, we just turned up with a camera and said that we worked for a magazine in order to get in, if I remember rightly, that night. Gordy can film in with that one, but Gordy did remind me about that recently. But it was something like, we just walked in with a camera and said we were there to film it, and they let us in. So I know that I don't really come off in any of these stories as particularly good, but this was all a long time ago when I was really young, and I'm just being honest, it is what it is. I'm trying not to, you know, embellish anything. But yeah, I'd like to know what your memories are of the building. What was the best bands you ever seen there? I'd like you to share your memories in the comments if you can. It was an institution, and it's been away for a while now, but I think there's something quite final about seeing the demolition team arriving on Sucky Hall Street. It's sad that something as important to our community has yet again had a mysterious fire shortly after being refused planning permission. What a place where our favourite bands and DJs played is now going to be expensive student flats. And Sucky Hall Street's in a lot of trouble right now. I mean, that was the heart of Glasgow for many years. And it's been looking like a demolition site. Not just this week, it's been looking like a demolition site for years due to various fires, renovations, roadworks. Also, by the way, the old campus building also got burnt down, which was kind of like a cheap student club that disappeared. I hear that has reopened as a new venue for live music, food, comedy, entertainment, but I've not been there yet, and I can't remember off the top of my head what it's called. But I'm looking forward to checking that out. And yeah, you know, I just support your local venues, man.
We are here to tell the people that we hear you.
As you call that radio, TV, we are live. Just came back from a gig at the Carling Academy, I caught. It's for Dandy Warhol's and the Black Angels gig. And it was good. It was good. I've got a few thoughts about it. I wanted to share my thoughts with you because all my friends I was with said that they had to go home. Because unlike you, I've got a real job. I've got to work in the morning. And I was like, well, unlike me, because I've got a real job tonight, I've got to speak to the citizens, if you call that radio, and tell you all about what I thought I saw at the Dandy Warhols and the Black Angels at the Carling Academy. We call it the Carling Academy because it used to be called the Carling Academy, and for me, it will always be called the Carling Academy. And that's because, or maybe the Academy, but I will never call it the O2 because, you know, shout-outs to my brother who was at the gig tonight. He went, the O2 Academy, is that the one in Sucky Hall Street? Aye, mate, the one that burnt down about 7 or 8 years ago and it's been all over the newspapers. That is gone, but that was a confusion. People would say, I'll get you the O2 and you'd go to a gig on Sucky Hall Street or the one over the bridge near the Gorbals. So that is O2's problem for getting greedy and trying to buy two of the venues and one of them burnt down. And we're very sad about that, but anyway, that's not what this is about. This is about the Dandy Warhols and the Black Angels. This is what I think.
You call that radio TV.
Shout-outs to my friend who got me the free tickets. I don't know if he wants his name out there, so I'll not say his name, but it was much appreciated. My brother's a big fan. I'm a big fan of the Dandy Warhols. The Dandy Warhols were on first. There was someone else on, actually. Hold on. Let me just find out who was on first. Miranda Lee Richards. She was on first. An acoustic act. So she started things off about 7:15. She was really good. Lovely voice. Nice vibe to her. Good way to start the night. Me and my brother, we went there when I must have been about 14 and he must have been about 16 at the Garage many, many years ago. I think, I might be wrong, but I think it was when the Come Down album came out and that was, that had the hit, Not If You're the Last Junkie on Earth. I heard about that by watching the Joe Wiley Show, which was actually a really cool chat show. It was definitely cool to me as a teenager. We heard the song, bought the album, loved the album, and noticed they were playing in Glasgow that week, and it was over 14, so we could go. But what a great... And then seen them loads of times at Tea in the Park and various other venues. So I've always loved the band, but not seen them for about 10 years or something. Not really been up... Not been too up to date with the recent output, but from what I've heard, it's great. You'll probably know them if you're going, who the fuck's Dandy Warhols? You'll probably know them if you don't recognise the name. You probably know them as the band that the Vodafone advert, Bohemian Like You, which was a massive, like, international hit. Before that, there was two amazing albums, Dandy Rules OK and Come Down and Welcome to Bohemia. There was three cracking albums before that. In fact, was that in that? Hold on, I need to fact check myself. It was called 13 Tales from Urban Bohemia. And it was an absolutely brilliant album, man. Absolutely brilliant. And then after, I think it was... the other one was called Welcome to the Monkey House. Sorry, I got them mixed up there. You Were the Last Highway, I think, was in that one. That was amazing. Got some bangers, man, absolute bangers, but they're a live band for me. They're just so cool. They're one of the coolest bands in the world. You know, I think they've got a song called Cool as Kim Deal. Well, they are as cool as Kim Deal. That's the highest compliment I can pay to them that I'm sure they would like. Sleazy, psychedelic jams, rock and roll. They look like they're rocking, they're still rocking and roll. In fact, actually, they look really young tonight. I think I've overtaken them in the age. I was younger than them, but they're looking great for their age. So Dandy Warhols, shout-outs to Miranda, she was brilliant. Then the Dandy Warhols start with two classics, two songs that I knew straight away. So you're always worried when you go to these things in case it's going to be newer stuff, and you might not know it as well, but they started with two tunes that I knew, so it was we were in, and then third song, Zia picks up the bass guitar, and the backdrop goes all psychedelic, and I thought the lighting guy or the guy that was in charge of the visuals did a great job, kind of kept it subtle throughout most of the gig, but then at the right moments it would get very colourful. I liked that. I was so high the first time I saw the Dandy Warhols. In fact, all the times I've seen the Dandy Warhols, that tonight I felt like absolutely stoned in my box, almost tripping with the little visuals there was. There wasn't one over the top visual thing, but it just the amount of high I was at previous gigs, it just brought it back, and you're in a trance with them. Lots of instrumentals, and they're just doing their thing. Cool as fuck. I mean, I could probably say this because I would imagine the statute limits of someone passing you a joint are over now. But the first time I seen them, I won't say who it is, I'll maybe bleep that out. But one of them passes a joint into the crowd. And I don't know if I was the first person to hit it or the second, but we all just got a puff and passed it on. And that was amazing, man. That was liberating. That was before the smoking ban. If you're trying to guess my age, it was before the smoking ban. They did play Bohemian Like You, which was great. Because I was like, well, they're only playing for an hour. They're not headlining, so they're probably only going to play for 45 minutes, an hour. There's songs I would rather have seen apart from that. But they played Godless. I think I heard them right. It was a guy playing the trumpet part. I think he's from Scotland. I think they get him up every time they're in Scotland. That was amazing. I think I recognised him as well, but maybe they said something completely different. I don't know. But that was a great moment. And, you know, they played I Love You. I love you. I love you. The Creep Out. Is it The Creep Out? The sort of the big jam. They played that as well. You also might know them. I know they don't really like talking about that in the same way that Brian Jones and Masker don't like talking about it. But they were both in a documentary called Dig. So that's how you might recognise the name. The documentary Dig. Which I think both Dandy Warhols and Brian Jones and Masker don't like, because it was kind of a fly in the wall documentary following them about, and they were all, you know, getting mad with it, getting on it, and fawning it, and there was like fighting and accusations. But if you're a neutral, I was a fan of the Dandy Warhols when I watched it, and it made me a fan of Brian Jones and Masker, and I think they're pals again now. I don't know. I don't know what the script is, but I know that neither side really particularly likes the documentary public, because they get asked about it all the time. And they were probably so young when that happened that it must be so annoying that anyone asks them about it anymore. And if any of them are watching right now, they're probably really annoyed that I've even brought it up. But it's just to give context to people who are like, well, I recognise that name. It's probably the Dig documentary. If you've not seen it, go watch it. And if you do watch it, don't mention that you watched it to either of the band, because, you know, I don't think they're fans. But they should acknowledge that it's when they get old and grey, they'll be like, that is a good piece of television, and they got millions of new fans, both bands, for that, I would have imagined. I don't think it caused any damage. I was left with a short set. There's so many more songs I would rather see than Bohemian Like You. But then when it came on, you just felt the atmosphere, and everybody singing it word for word, man, and it was beautiful. It took me back, man. It was a total, I was glowing in nostalgia. I just felt, I felt young again, and it was good. It was a good moment. But then straight after that, they went right into Get Off, and honestly, that was a moment, man. It was a moment when Get Off came on. I was just like, man, I was welling up, man. I was welling up with tears. I didn't actually cry. I never cry. But for a fact, when was the last time I felt that? Was actually in the Academy as well, when it was Jamie T. And it just takes you back to your youth. You feel young again, and you feel what you want to greet. with joy, with joy, with happiness. And then you look around and you go, everyone's getting older. We're all getting older. Life is short. And then you probably want to greet because you're sad. I don't know. It's good though. Oh, and I got slagged for my jacket. Hold on, let me see if I can find it. You call that radio? So I got slagged for this jacket. I get slagged for this. And I didn't even know I was getting slagged at first, but a guy came up to me and says, Sean Ryder in the house. Oh no, he said Sean Ryder's in the house. And the way he said that, I thought Sean Ryder was actually there. Because it was a good bum up. He did it subtly. But what he was doing was referring, and then he said, Are you Mancunian? And I realised he was bamming me up. That guy, the guy that slagged me, had a fabulous hat. But I'm assuming he doesn't live in the same place as me. You know, the kind of places that I live are the kind of places that you get stabbed for wearing fabulous hats. So you just try and wear something that you think other people might wear. And then the Black Angels, who were amazing, man. They reminded me of kind of Black Rebel Motorcycle Club. And at points, vocally, kind of, there was some, I could hear a bit of a Stone Roses influence, but they were really good. They were really good. I have listened to them before, like, over a couple of years. I think, actually, I learned about them through the Dandy Warhols, who bigged them up a couple of years ago. So I've been following them on Spotify, and I have heard their tunes before, and I really like them. But it's the first time I've seen them live. Didn't know too much about them. Amazing, man. The drum sound was incredible for them. And, you know, the band were tight. They smashed it, man. They absolutely smashed it. But anyway, I would say that the Dandy Warhols are still on tour. Go and check them out, man. And check out the Black Angels. Both bands are worth your time. For the Dandy Warhols, I would start with Come Down or 13 Tales from Urban Bohemia and Dandy Rules OK. They're my favourites. But all their albums after that are also good. And Black Angels, I don't really know much about them. But I would recommend them as well. They're both on tour. They're doing a world tour together. So go and check them out if you can. And yeah, join me tomorrow where I'm going to be doing a thing about alcohol pricing. And the fact that the Scottish government has put up the minimum alcohol pricing to stop Scottish people from drinking. And we're going to look at if that's been successful or not. And you can all call me a hypocrite. And a liar and a thief because I was wearing shades in the previous video, which means I maybe had a couple of drinks myself. But I mean, fucking hell, man. It's not I'm driving your ambulance. I'm just making you some fucking content about music. I'm just making some content. I'm not driving your ambulance. Just let me be, man. I'm just trying to give you a review. Back in the day, we used to write blogs. Remember them? Well, hopefully, once AI figures out the Scottish accent, I'll be able to just turn this into a transcript and then put it as a blog. If you'd rather a blog with no accent and no sunglasses, then that's the future, man. That's the future. One day they will figure out the Scottish accent. Until then, we can see what we want, and the robots don't have a fucking clue.
I got you. Yeah, 1-2, 1-2, 1-2. Yo, this is Charlie Tuna from Jurassic 5 live and direct here in Glasgow, Scotland, and you call that radio?